is a true story taken from an actual medical file.
Hi there, Mary.
Hello, Frank.
Say, I've been meaning to ask you. There's a swell showing at the Garden on Friday night. Big professional tennis. How about if I can get some seats,
You won't. They're booked solid.
I can try. Will you come along?
Well, I... Hey, Frank, what's that noise?
What's what?
That noise. Listen. Oh, Frank, it sounds like...
It's a plane. It's right outside the building. Mary, look out!
Your name is Lincoln. You're a doctor with the emergency unit at New York's Bellevue Hospital. When the 7 alarm goes, you know to expect trouble, and you're prepared to meet it. For the 7 alarm means catastrophe.
Medical File. Factual stories of the men and women whose vigilance guards our lives. A reconstruction of clinical case histories, step by step, with the doctors who were there. Tonight, you'll hear the story, Aftermath, in Medical File.
Tuesday, July 28, 1945. 10:30 a.m. that day, I was in casualty. It was like any other day, any other time in casualty. Accident victims, a boy bitten by a spider, a woman suffering from food poisoning, a man with a bullet in his arm. We had no inkling then of what had happened only a few minutes before. But it was only a matter of seconds, and suddenly, Tuesday, March 28th, became like no other morning had been for a long, long time.
Just a moment, and I'll put you through. Bellevue Hospital? Emergency? Yes. Yes, what was that? Yes, of course, right away. Oh, no, of all the things to happen.
Excuse me one moment, please. What's the matter?
Connie, press that alarm buzzer. 7 rings. Quickly, I'm going to call Dr. Lincoln in casualty.
7 rings, honey? Say, what's happened?
A plane crashed into the Empire State Building.
Oh, come on, stop kidding.
I'm not kidding. It happened just a few minutes ago. There's a whole lot of people killed and injured. Now hurry and ring that alarm.
Seven alarm, Dr. Lincoln. And now, what do you figure has happened?
The last time, it was the Con Edison plant. Remember that fire?
Remember it? Say, I remember the Normandy fire. That was 7 gongs, too.
Hey, somebody said the Empire State's fallen.
Oh, you're kidding.
Hello. Casualty. Yeah, he's right here. Hold on. For you, Dr. Lincoln. You want it in your office?
Oh, thanks. I'll take it here. Hello, Dr. Lincoln. Yeah? What is it? A what? All right, I'll get them there as fast as I can. Thank you.
Doc, what is it?
Empire State Building.
Fallen?
No, a bomber got lost in the fog. B-25 crashed into the 80th floor.
Fog? On a summer day?
How you get them that high up? Right, Levis, you call the catastrophe truck.
Yes, Doc.
We want splints, bandages, plasma, stretchers, portable tables.
Okay, sir.
Nurse, you call emergency. If they haven't already heard it, we want every ambulance they got on the road. Stretcher bearers, too. All they can give us. They can proceed independently. Location point is the Empire State Building. Mac, you take over here. I'm going down there.
Right, Doctor.
Hello, Don. Lincoln. Did you hear the 7th alarm? Yes, the Empire State. That's right. Now, listen. I want every one of the 20 doctors from the catastrophe unit down there right away. Yes, every one of them. Okay, I'll leave it to you to put out the call. I'm on my way. Mac, you keep 3 of the nurses with you. Send the rest down.
All right, I'll get some beds ready, too. You'll be needing them.
Okay, thanks.
Looks like a bad one, doesn't it?
Yeah, looks like it.
Hello?
July 28th, 10:50 a.m. Smoke was pouring from the high tower of the Empire State Building. Fifth Avenue and 34th Street were jammed with crowds and traffic. It took a precious 10 minutes for the catastrophe squad to force its way through. The squad, formed by Bellevue Hospital to deal with matters of city emergency, consisted of 20 staff doctors and nurses on call in case of sudden disaster, together with a truck and ambulance units. Supplies include drugs and instruments, and in all force, the catastrophe squad is, in effect, a streamlined field hospital. This day, every available nurse and doctor was there, the full emergency unit, in the street below the burning building.
Please, come on, McWay.
I'm from Bellevue, officer. I got a group of nurses and doctors here. What floor is it?
The 80th off and two above us. I'll be glad to see you up there.
Our ambulances are blocked down the street. They can't get through the traffic. Will you see what you can do?
Right, I'll fix it.
Can we get up there all right?
Yeah, the elevators are working. One's out, I think, but the rest are okay. That B-25, she lost her way in the fog. Radio and instruments must have gone dead. She plowed into the side of the building.
Looks a mess. All right, we'll get up there. Thanks, officer.
I'll see the ambulances get through. You just send down the injured. I'll clear this roadway so they can get out.
A.M., we were on the 78th floor and the two above it, into which the army plane had crashed. The three floors were choked with smoke and fumes. Firemen worked in offices and corridors to try and prevent the fire from spreading. Grotesquely, through the smashed wall and windows, the wreckage of the B-25 was embedded. The casualties were already high.
There's four dead already over there, Dr. Lincoln. Another three on the floor above.
How many injured have you got up there?
11, mostly burn cases.
Okay. Right. We've got to get them out of here. This atmosphere is suffocating. See if you can get the elevators all up to this floor. Then we'll go on up to the two above and get them down to the lobby for treatment.
Okay, leave that to me, Doc.
Clifton?
Yes, Dr. Lincoln?
Get downstairs. Tell them to set up an emergency receiving unit in the lobby below. We'll want plasma, oxygen, and plenty of stretchers.
Right.
Doctor!
That's all right, old chap. Don't worry. We'll have you out of here soon.
Elevator?
Yes. We're getting the elevators now. You were seared by gasoline and burnt when the plane exploded. We'll have you in hospital in half an hour. You'll be okay.
No. Elevator girl. Mary.
What's wrong?
Elevator. When the plane crashed out of control.
Wait a minute. The elevator that isn't working.
Yeah, it must have crashed into the basement. My girl. Get her out.
I got them on the way up now, Doc. This guy looks in a bad way.
Third degree burns. Unconscious. Possible traumatic shock. He just told me one of the elevators took a dive when the plane hit from this floor.
Hey, how many in it?
Oh, he told me one of the elevator girl. His girl.
Oh, too bad. 78 floors. She wouldn't have stood a chance.
I shouldn't think so. We'll check as soon as we get down there.
Here they come now, the elevators.
All right, everyone. Listen to me a minute, will you? We're taking the injured down. There's a receiving unit set up in the lobby. Anyone who needs emergency oxygen or plasma gets it there. The rest can go straight to hospital. The dead can wait until we take the wounded down. Okay, come on now. Let's get them out of here as quickly as we can.
Tuesday, July 28th, 11:35 a.m. We had the injured removed. The dead, including members of the plane crew, were brought down later. While the firemen stayed to fight the smoke and fumes, we had the casualties treated where treatment was necessary, and then we had them removed to Bellevue Casualty Ward. 11:46 a.m., an hour and a quarter after the bomber had struck, the list stood at 10 dead, 29 injured. There was one yet to come.
Dr. Lincoln.
Yeah?
We haven't been able to reach the girl yet.
Well, what's happened?
The elevator crashed right through into the basement. The caretaker's going to take us down there.
Okay, we're just about finished up here. I'll come along.
This here is what we call this, the sub-basement. You can see what's happened, all right.
Pretty dark. Where's the light switch?
Oh, I'll get it.
Oh, Dr. Lincoln, look.
Good grief. That's what I figured, Doc. She came down out of control and tore through the casing shaft.
Come on, nurse, quickly.
Right.
You won't find anybody alive in there. It ain't possible.
Maybe not, but just the same. Gotta be sure.
These elevators too fast, I say. Always knew there'd be an accident one day.
This was hardly the fault of the elevator.
Too bad. She was a nice kid. Ran the express to the 80th. Good looker. Small, big dimples. You got her.
Wait a minute. Yes. Here's her arm. There's a steel bar lying across her body. Just give me a hand, Lefty, will you?
Sure.
Nurse, check the pulse.
Right, Doctor.
You don't think she's still alive, do you?
Who's there? Who is it?
Why?
Don't drop that bar.
She's alive.
What happened to me?
It's all right, honey. You had a fall in the elevator. Just lie still now. We're going to get you out of here just as soon as we can.
You are listening to Medical File.
July 28th, 12:15 p.m. A girl had survived a terrifying ordeal. She was alive in the wreckage of the elevator after an 80-floor drop out of control. Her name was Mary Adams. She was 22 years old. By 12:30 p.m., we had her in casualty at Bellevue. And half an hour later, we knew the full extent of her injuries.
Looks like we got
the... Here's the X-ray report, Doctor.
Oh, thanks, nurse.
Oh, it's... It doesn't give her much chance, does it?
Not a great chance.
Oh, what is it, Dr. Lincoln?
Broken spine, broken leg, possible concussion of the brain.
80 floors. That's a mighty long way.
Plus multiple burns and abrasions. Check the pulse again, nurse, please.
Yes, doctor.
I don't like the way she's looking, doctor. She was awake, almost chatty when you brought her in. Now she's pretty deeply unconscious.
It was a miracle she was alive at all.
How did it happen?
Well, from what we can make out, she was at the 80th floor when the bomber hit the building. That's her elevator terminus. She was standing inside the elevator talking to a friend of hers. He was just outside. Otherwise, he'd have gone with her.
Is that the kid, the one who keeps asking for her?
Yeah, that's the one. It seems a piece of metal ripped through the elevator control shaft after the plane exploded and everything went haywire. No controls would work. It must have crashed into that sub-basement at terrific speed.
Doctor, this pulse.
What's the matter, nurse?
Oh, there doesn't seem to be one.
Oh, here. Let me check.
There seemed to be just a flutter, but...
Yeah, there is just a flutter. No more than that.
Traumatic shock, Dr. Lincoln?
Yeah, deep shock. Danger of irreversible circulatory failure. Call for plasma. Hurry.
July 28th, 1:30 p.m. The patient was in a profound traumatic shock condition. Plasma was given, and the foot of her bed then elevated to allow the blood to flow more freely toward the brain. Warm blankets and hot water bottles were called for. 1:50 p.m., we supported the heart action with doses of adrenaline and caffeine. Meanwhile, the rest of the casualty ward had been taken over by the other 29 injured, some of them almost critical cases.
Link, I've admitted all but two to hospital. A couple with abrasions have allowed to go home.
What about the burn cases?
Well, we've got a doctor and a nurse to almost every single one of them. They get in the best we can give them. But two or three are only pretty bad.
Get supplies of cortisone, all we need. And petroleum jelly packs.
Sure. How's the kid coming along?
Not so good. She's in shock. We've done all we can. It's a matter of waiting now.
It became a matter of waiting for all the injured. 29 hospital admissions. 9 of them critical. During the night, 2 of the worst burn cases died. The following morning, there was one further death. Pictures of the Empire State Building, of the wreckage, and of our catastrophe squad were all on the front pages that day. A spokesman for the Army announced an immediate inquiry. The builders and demolition experts moved into the Empire State. Business in the world's largest building went on as usual. Only one elevator was not running that day. In a private ward, 317 of Bellevue's emergency admission wing, Mary Adams was fighting for her life. Pulse rate had increased slightly during the night. Further plasma and adrenaline were given. A sign was placed on her door. No visitors.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gordon. No visitors till further notice.
But couldn't I just go in there for a moment, just to say hello?
I'm afraid not. Doctor's orders. Besides, you're not strictly a walking patient yet yourself.
Yeah. Well, tell me, how's she getting on?
She's a little better.
Honest?
Less deeply in shock. But there are other injuries. It's going to take a long time.
August the 5th, 1945. There was one further death, bringing the total of fatalities to 14. Of the injured, most were discharged this same week, only 9 remaining. Mary Adams, the sole case, still classed as critical. August the 9th, her condition improved. August the 12th, 3 days later, we were able to remove her name from the list of those critically ill. The shock condition had been overcome. There were still the injuries, and this we knew would be longer and a great deal slower. This might be the supreme test of one person's courage and another's patience.
Yeah, you wanted to see me, Dr. Lincoln?
Mr. Gordon, isn't it?
That's right.
Won't you sit down? So now, I believe you're leaving us today.
Yeah, I'm all patched up.
Oh, good. You going back to your job?
Yeah, next week. They're renovating our offices.
Oh, that's fine.
Doc, how's Mary?
Oh, she's coming along nicely. As a matter of fact, that's why I wanted to see you before you left today.
Yeah?
I'd like to get something clear. Is she your girl?
My... No, I guess I couldn't say that exactly.
She wasn't your girl. We rather had the idea.
Yeah, I know you did. I never told anybody otherwise because that was the way I wanted it. I was, well, just a friend. Sometimes Mary would come out with me, but when Steve was around, I didn't even rate.
Steve?
Steve Willard. He works in the Empire State, some advertising firm. He's older than me. He was Mary's steady. Nobody else had a chance. Why do you want to know all this?
Because Mary's going to need some help. The kind of help we can't give her.
What do you mean?
She's out of shock now. The suspected brain concussion hasn't proved as bad as we first thought. That'll be all right.
What else is wrong with her?
A lot of minor things, but principally, a broken spine.
Broken? That means she won't be able to walk again.
She will walk someday, but it won't ever be quite the same again.
She will walk.
Yeah, we'll teach her. But it's going to require all the courage she possesses and all the encouragement she can get.
Yeah, I'm beginning to understand.
We made inquiries. Her parents are both dead. She's no close relatives in New York, so there had to be somebody else. And we thought that person might be you.
Yeah, I wish it was.
How do I get in touch with this Steve Willard?
Well, I'll do it if you like. Hasn't he been up to see her yet?
No, not since she was allowed visitors, so far as I know. If he came before that, he'd have been blocked at the desk. You know what I want, don't you?
Yeah, I think so.
I want someone to come here and make her believe that life's going to be worth living again. Just now, she's too sick to care very much, and we've got to make her care if she's going to walk again.
August 15th, 1945. 3 days since Frank Gordon had been discharged from hospital. And during that time, there was no word. Mary Adams continued to improve, but as yet, we hadn't broken to her the full extent of her injuries. I was waiting for Steve Willard, determined that if I heard no word by morning, to attempt to contact him myself. Then late that day, around 4:30 p.m., Frank Gordon came in to see me. Right away, I could tell something had gone wrong.
I'm sorry I took all this time, Doc. I guess you thought I hadn't bothered.
Not exactly, but I was wondering what had happened to you.
Well, I wish I hadn't bothered.
What?
Well, then I wouldn't have this bad taste that I can't get rid of. He wouldn't come. He wasn't interested.
Didn't you say that Mary was his girl?
Well, I thought so. Mary did, too. I know that for sure. But now it seems he had a wife. Had her all along. Didn't come down to see Mary, first of all, because it was too front page. He was scared of getting photographed. Now, well, I told him how badly she was hurt, and he said he was sorry.
I'm sorry, too, that I asked you to go through with this.
You know something? I'm glad. He always was a louse, and she's better without him.
But just now, she needs somebody who believes in her very badly.
Doc, they told me today that I don't have to go back to work for a few weeks yet. I got all the time in the world to fill in. And I believe in her. I could try, couldn't I? Try and help her?
That's all we ask, Frank. That somebody tries. Because we'll both be trying, you and me, to help her all we can.
On August 16th, Mary Adams learned for the first time that her spine had been broken, that long months of slow recovery lay ahead. On November 5th, almost 3 months later, she was finally well enough to fit with braces for her legs and spine, preparatory to learning how to walk again. If I cover it briefly, it was far from brief. It was tedious daily therapy, hour after hour, and there were times when Mary lost heart, and only Frank Gordon could talk her into going on. And then it was March 1946. And that day, they came into my room to see me. Mary had been a patient for almost 8 months.
Hey, Doc, we're not disturbing you, are we?
No, not at all. Come right in.
Thanks. Mary?
I can manage, Frank.
Sure you can. Mind if I shut the door, Doc?
No, go ahead. Sit down, Mary. You too, Frank.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Lincoln.
Well, how are the crutches?
Oh, still a bit difficult.
Oh, she's making better time every day, Doc. I'm timing her over an even 20 yards.
You know, sometimes I think he's just a frustrated track coach. He writes it all down in a book. He got quite upset one day last week when I slipped back 2 seconds.
Yeah, but she made it up the next day.
Good.
Doc.
Yes, Frank?
How soon before Mary gets out of hospital?
How soon? Well, I suppose she could leave any time now, but I'd rather she didn't yet a while. Say, another month. Why, Mary, are you getting tired of us?
We want to get married.
Well, that's wonderful.
Oh, I think it is, too. The most wonderful thing that ever happened.
Doc, we figured you'd say she couldn't leave yet a while, and that fits in with our plans just fine, because we want it to be here in hospital. That's if it can be arranged.
Well, I don't see anyone around here saying no. How long have you two been planning this?
Oh, quite a long time. You see, I kept asking about Steve, and Frank kept putting me off. And, well, I suppose when I finally made him tell me, I'd already guessed it anyway. And it didn't hurt. It didn't hurt a bit. Well, I think perhaps that was when I knew that I was in love with Frank.
And then one day I asked her straight out to marry me. And then she said, yeah. Just like that. I nearly killed over. Hey, by the way, Doc.
Yeah, what is it, Frank?
Mary hasn't got any close folks, as you know. And we were kind of hoping to do this right. So could you sort of line up with us? You know, give the bride away? That way it'll really mean something to both of us.
March 12, 1946, was a day to remember at Bellevue Hospital. For 3:30 p.m. that day, we had a wedding. And just 2 weeks later, Mary Adams Gordon was discharged from hospital. Within 6 months, she was able to walk without crutches and remove the braces from her legs and back. The last letter I had from her, she was back in hospital again. No, not here in Bellevue. Out where she and Frank are living in California. She was happy about going back to hospital, too, because they already had a girl. And this time, they made it a perfect pair with an 8-pound, very red, and very healthy boy.
medical file, the documented story of the men and women who in hospitals, research centers, and lonely surgeries guard our lives. Listen again next week for another true story from Medical File.